Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 253. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, the newest, biggest Jared Kelnick supporter in the podcast, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how you feeling, bud?
I will have to be a big supporter and hope that it works out well for Atlanta. Should be the new everyday left fielder, much improved over last year, at least with Eddie Rosario, we hope. And I think there's a lot more to unlock with Kelnick, so pretty excited about the deal, especially considering they didn't really give up much at all. So it was not a hard deal to make. I know they took on some salary dumps, but there's already word that Marco Gonzalez is on the way out. And my prediction, as soon as the trade happens, was that Gonzalez and Evan White would neither be on the opening day roster. And I still don't think that's the case. They cut them. I don't think they care about White, but I think Gonzalez gets flipped somewhere and he's off the books too. Yeah, Kelnick, for what it was, a really solid deal. And I'm ready to see how it plays out.
No, it absolutely was. And Evan White literally did nothing after signing that extension. Obviously he got hurt, and but the performance wasn't great either, but still want to see what he can, if he can actually do anything. But yeah, I think it was a low risk move for you guys, and I still think there's a lot of moves to be had. I want to see what Seattle's doing. I want to see what they're up to up there, see if they're trying to free up some money there to, you know, go after a big name or whatever or whoever. But yeah, it's a fun little start to the winter meetings here, and see what else we get over the next handful of days. But we're dipping into the prospect world as we start our dynasty and prospect positional rankings. And we're back up to two episodes a week. Feels good. It was a little weird. It was a nice little break to do just one a week, but it did feel weird not doing the two for the last, you know, month and a half or so. But back up to two, starting with catcher today. So going forward, the early week show will be the prospect episode, And the late week show will be the Dynasty one. We have various guests lined up along the way, including a guest later on this week for our Dynasty Catcher Rankings episode. But again, today will be our top 25 or so catcher prospect rankings. Before we get into the show, though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPaw. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty prospect, FYPD rankings, daily write-ups, a lot of good stuff over there. So check those out. Let's start with our, you know, let's go with our personal top 10 rankings here, Chris, and we'll get into some various topics here. You'll kick us off with your top 10 catcher prospect rankings.
Sure. Starting off at the top with Samuel Basalo, followed by Ethan Salas, Kyle Teal, Harry Ford, and Jefferson Caro, rounding out the top five. And then after that is 6 through 10 with Dalton Rushing, Ramon Ramirez, Moises Ballesteros, Austin Wells, and Ben Rice.
Couple of Yankees there rounding out your 10. My 10, I also have Samuel Basalo 1. I go Harry Ford 2, Ethan Salas 3, Ben Rice 4, Austin Wells 5, Dalton Rushing 6, Moises Ballesteros 7, Jefferson Caro 8, Kyle Teal 9, and Hunter Goodman 10. We'll talk a little bit about Hunter Goodman a bit later in the show here, but I think there's a, you know, right at the top, Chris, there's a pretty wide range of like, who is the number one catching prospect right now. At least I think in the industry there is various other rankings that have different players number one, but I think the general public thinks it's pretty easily Ethan Salas. It's easy to see why, given what happened this past year. And I put out a poll from our Toolshed account here. Yes, who is your number one catching prospect? I put Ford, Salas, and Basalo. 48.5% went Ethan Salas, and then Basalo about 27%, Ford 20%, and then 4% went other with various other players. I have a hard time putting him one. I still have him 3. But what I want to, you know, when I want to ask people that have him one, and a lot of people that said by a long shot, like why? Give me a reason why that doesn't have anything to do with him being 17 in AA. Because it's not like it was a, and while he looked solid, and obviously there was reasons why he got bumped quickly, but it wasn't like it was a Jackson Churio situation from 2022 when he was just absolutely tearing things up offensively. Like, he was fine offensively, but I wouldn't even say he was good offensively. He was fine, maybe better than fine. Maybe that's a little harsh given that his age to level. But I think when you look at long-term projections for him, above average hit, above average power, I think he's in that ballpark. A little bit of speed too. He's a good athlete, but he doesn't scream fantasy stud for me, Chris. I'm confused as to why I see him in top, some people's top 20 rankings. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this whole Ethan Salas mania we got going on right now?
I'm writing up the Padres system right now, and so I just wrote him up yesterday. And I think it's justified in a way, but I'm not sure it's justified in most people's eyes for all the right reasons. I think that a lot of people just look at the performance and age and just go berserk with it. But what kind of turned me, and not that I was ever off of him per se, but what turned me back on and said, okay, this was actually really good stuff, is the under the hood data. You had to factor in that he was 16 years old when he signed. He was getting reps in Major League spring training as a 16-year-old. He reached double A not long after turning 17, which is wild to think about. I think that the maturity's there beyond his age. He should still be in high school. He'd be young for next summer's amateur draft, which is wild to think. But what he did was, I think, pretty impressive. His zone contact rate was 85%. His overall contact rate was 77.5%. He chased less than 20% of the time out of the zone. And that's pretty advanced plate discipline skills for someone that age. Like, factor in a high school junior doing this against minor league pitching. And that's pretty wild, because those numbers are firmly above average. The plate discipline skills, I think, are plus or better. The contact skills were above average to plus. And then you factor in the age and it's like, dang. The exit velocities were pretty good too for his age. 87 mile an hour average and a 9th percentile of 102. Those are both slightly below like MLB average. But if we factored in like him compared against people his age, like with wood bats, he'd be like 100th percentile. So like if you go on Perfect Game or PBR and look at this data that you can see on some of these prep guys that would be his age, like Sal's would be above all of them. So I think when you look at the combined makeup of the bat and the skills behind the plate and most likely sticking behind the plate, like it seems like how advanced he is at catcher is pretty telling and that he's going to be a long-term catcher unless something drastically changes. Now on the flip side of all that, despite everything looking really good, he's 17 and he's potentially going to be rushed. I think that that's a real possibility that the Padres rush him. We've seen them do this in the past where they like to push guys aggressively like they did with CJ Abrams when he was not quite ready. Now I said that Salas probably needs at least 1.5 more seasons before he's ready to debut. But we're looking at the fact that he made Double A last year, and 1.5 seasons would put him just turning 19, which is crazy in its own mind. So a lot can happen with a player this young. And I think that's where the risk factor comes in, is that he is so young and that he hasn't, or he's being pushed, and that he needs to prove that he can spend time on the development track without ultimately being rushed. And so while I think all the intangibles are there, I do think that there are some concerning factors too. You know, peak really early. And I think that's a real possibility. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I'm fairly interested in what Salas does moving forward.
Yeah. And absolutely the talent's there. And I've even me, that's more kind of being, you know, pretty cautious over here with Salas. Like, there's no denying that the talent's there, and I still think he's going to be a very good player. This kind of gives me a feel of when, you know, for different reasons, but I don't think I've seen this big of a kind of a potential selling or sell high window on a prospect outside of the Jason Dominguez mania when he was getting comped to Mantle and Trout and Bo Jackson back in, was that 2019, I believe it was. And even at that time, I wasn't saying that Dominguez couldn't become a very good player. And obviously he has, and you know, obviously he got hurt, but and Salas absolutely could as well. It's just, it feels weird to see him, even in the P1 ADP mocks that are going on right now. Let's see, where did Salas go? The ones that Chris Welsh is putting on. Yeah, he went 2-5 in a 12-teamer. That's pick 17 overall. It's like some names on the board that went right behind, like Mayo, Jenkins, PCA, Roman Anthony, Matt Shaw, Minzardo, guys like that, Basalo, Jackson Merrill, Amador. So I just feel like he's being pushed way too high. It's not a question of talent. It's just a question of how high he's being pushed overall. And I think it's just a clear sell high window for me right now. Again, not denying the talent. I still have him third, but just feels like he's being pushed way too high right now. Just largely due to 17 in Double A. Fantastic, but he's still got a ways to go. And I hope they don't stunt his development like they did with Abrams. I'm glad you mentioned him, as I was bringing him up too, about how they rushed him, not nearly as quickly, but still rushed him in general. And then we saw that it took a bit of a time for him to get his feet wet. And then now this past year, he took off with the Nationals. Hope that's not the case with Salas. But overall, I think those are the kind of the top few names here. But Samuel Basalo, Chris, we both have number one. He was absolutely phenomenal this past season, and I still don't think he gets enough love in rankings and in dynasty circles. Look what he did. You know, very good, 6'3" frame, still only 19 years old, and he got the Double A end of the season as well. Overall, 313, 402, 551 slash line, 20 home runs, 12 steals, 61 walks to 94 strikeouts and 483 plate appearances. It's absolutely demolished both low A and especially high A before he got promoted to Double A for over a cup of coffee end of the year. How high has he risen in your overall rankings? Obviously, we both have him number one. Is he top 20 for you now? Do you think he could be even top 10? Obviously, the position could play some catcher, some first. Obviously, they have Adley there. So my hope is that, as I just wrote up Baltimore system, and I think I wrote something along the lines of, I hope he, you know, is mostly first baseman, but plays enough as Adley's backup to keep that eligibility, because this could be a very highly sought after catcher for fantasy purposes if he's able to keep that tag, and still could be a first base as well.
Yeah, he's top 20 for me. I think that everything is pretty legit. You look under the hood and there's strong contact skills and power. The power is quite advanced for his age, and he's got a frame that you can dream on, where it's a big frame, big power. I think that he actually benefits by playing some first base with catcher. It's like one for fantasy profiles. This is great. Keep the catcher eligibility, but let him play nearly every day because he's playing multiple positions, which doesn't typically happen from a catcher. And I ultimately think that he will be one of those guys that could be a 25-30 home run bat, and the hit tool sustain. I think Basalo certainly has moved up a lot, and I think there is top 10 potential here depending on how the hit tool evolves. Like, you're not going to get any speed out of this profile, so for fantasy you could weigh that in and say, okay, if he's a plus power with average hit and no speed, like, how does that actually grade out for fantasy purposes? But if he ticks up and we say he's above average hitter and he's showing signs that he can hit like 275 with 25-28 home runs, and suddenly I think he's creeping up a little bit more, and there's some serious intrigue with Basalo, where internally I know they value him highly too. I've been told he's one of the untouchables in the system, one of the few untouchables, including Holiday, and they value Basalo over a lot of the big names that most would be accustomed to thinking are high up there in the Orioles system. So for me, I'm all over Samuel Basalo and highly interested.
Do you still think he's undervalued too, just in a general sense?
Probably, but I think more and more are kind of coming around to him at this point, with kind of an offseason to see what he did. I think the buy window was like August to October, and now it's phasing out. But I still think most people aren't as high on him as they should be.
Yeah, I think those comments coming out of Baltimore camp that you just mentioned about how he's untouchable, I think that when people hear that word untouchable, I think, all right, let me look into a guy like Sammy Basal a little bit more here. Maybe I'm not thinking of him as highly as I should, but yeah, the absolute talent is absolutely there. This just another stud in this Baltimore system. Do you have him ahead of Mayo yet, or is he still behind Mayo? I have him third behind Mayo and Holiday in the system.
Yeah, same. I still have him behind Mayo. Mayo's just a little further along in the development path, and it's almost major league ready. And while I don't think the skill sets are that dissimilar, you just have the fact that Mayo's proved at the higher levels, and currently the EVs that Mayo posted are a little bit better. And so from that standpoint, I'm leaning Mayo.
Yeah, same here. But yeah, it's getting closer. It's definitely a lot closer than I thought it would be. I have Mayo currently 12th, and I have Basalo at 22, so about 10 spots apart. But again, that gap is shrinking, but every week it seems, and nothing to do with Mayo. Obviously, I'm very high in Mayo, but just Basalo keeps inching higher and higher. And he's probably going to get up there very soon. That kind of leads us into our next subject here about what we mentioned with Basalo. He might move off, play some first. We'll see how much catcher he plays moving forward. And that's, I think that's always the question a lot of people ask, especially with catchers and shortstops. I feel like that's like the only two positions that really get asked the question of, can so-and-so player stick at the position? And with catchers especially, because all these guys, they move out from behind the plate, whether it's the first base, you know, outfield, maybe even a little bit third. The profile, while it still might be good, becomes slightly less intriguing without that catcher tag along with it. So just looking at our top 10s for now, Chris, who are maybe a name or two that you might be concerned about moving off of the position moving forward that might lose eligibility?
Yeah, I think that we have to think about that, because while some guys can catch and also like play other positions, there's certainly some that have the potential to completely just move off. And I think that's the case with actually several of these guys in the top 10. And actually, I think I listed half of them as potentials where Basalo is the first one that comes to mind, where I do think he catches enough. Obviously, the Orioles have a guy named Adley Rutschman in there.
Who's that?
So he's going to catch pretty much every day. But I do think Basalo can catch on the days that Adley does not. And then you play Basalo at first the other days. I have zero concerns about Silas and Teal moving off or Jefferson Caro. All those guys are elite behind the dish and don't pose much of a threat. Harry Ford is one that I think can move off. And it's not that he's like terrible behind the plate, but I think his athleticism probably plays better somewhere else. And from what I saw in the Arizona Fall League, I do think that he's probably better suited to slide over to a second base or a corner outfield spot. I'll be interested to see where they choose for Ford to go. So I do think Ford's a risk. I think Dalton Rushing is a risk to potentially move somewhere else. I think that he could play first or corner outfield. The Dodgers obviously have a ton in the pipeline with catchers. Will Smith's going to be around for a while, plus several others in the system. I just don't think Moises Ballesteros' body is going to hold up behind the plate. Just if you are listening, just Google him. If you've never seen what he looks like, he's the most interesting looking body in baseball. I think Austin Wells probably moves off as well. And potentially even Ben Rice. I think Ben Rice can move off. That's half the list that has a chance to potentially go somewhere else. It's risky. You have to play those risk. And that's why catching prospects are risky. But I can tell you I'm most comfortable with Salas, Teal, and Jefferson Caro sticking behind the plate long term.
So since we're doing a little bit of YouTube now, I'm trying to throw up a picture here of Moises Ballesteros on the screen real quick so people can get a visual. Yeah, there's Moises Ballesteros right there. This is an article from the Bleed Cubbies Blue, the SB Nation Cubs site, which I believe Sarah Sanchez writes for, if I recall correctly, yep. Or podcast for, or both. Great website. SB Nation's always done pretty good work there. But yeah, definitely an interesting body that you got to really question if he does take a catcher long-term. That's for sure. Yeah, I was looking through the list, at least of my top 10. And yeah, the only ones, and you mentioned them, Salas and Teal. Those ones I feel really good about. Even Hunter Goodman, I know I have him at 10. You have him a few spots below that. Obviously, we left him on. We almost took him off because he didn't catch much this year. And especially, I don't think he caught at all at the major league level. So he's one that I think is a high likelihood moves off the position. But we figured we'll talk about him here. So we won't talk about him in outfield or whatever. But Caro, good defender. Obviously, Teal, who you've seen a lot live, great defender. I wonder, who do you think, maybe it's neither of these two, but the two Yankee guys, Chris?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Who do you think has a better chance of sticking at catcher long term? Like 3 years from now, who is their starting catcher? Do you think it's one of these two guys? Maybe they go outside the system. Who has a better chance of sticking catcher in your mind between Ben Rice and Austin Wells?
Between the two is probably Rice.
Yeah,
but I do think they go out of the system. I don't think either of these guys are someone that they want catching actively. So it's a tough spot, but I do think they go out and get someone outside.
Now, let's keep it there with the two Yankee guys. I had them, let's see what item, Rice 4, Wells 5, and you had them 5 spots lower, Wells 9, and Rice 10. What is it? I know you've. I think we've talked about Austin Wells a little bit, and I know you. I'm not surprised to see Wells down there, but I was thinking that you might have Rice a bit higher in your rankings. Why don't you? It's out of curiosity.
Honestly, like when I did my update in October, I bumped him up pretty significantly, and I was afraid to go too much higher. And I'm going, so right now it's basically updates like team by team. And so I'm updating the overall as I'm doing my team write-ups. So I haven't got to the Yankees yet. Almost done with the NL West, and we'll be turning the page to the AL. I will be to the AL East soon. I'd imagine that once that does update, I'm through the AL East, that Rice probably slots in at 8. I've put him ahead of Ballesteros. Maybe at 7 above Ramon Ramirez too, just because he's not as proven. I'm comfortable with that top 6, so I think I could slot Rice in behind there, but probably not any higher than the top 6 of Basalo, Salas, Teal, Ford, Caro, and Rushing.
Yeah, he was just so impressive. Obviously, I only saw him a handful of times during that series when Somerset came up here after he was promoted to AA. But once he got to AA, he was the best hitter in the league. And yeah, he's a bit older. He's 24. He'll be 25 before the next season starts in the later part of February. 12th rounder, and it wasn't really on anyone's radar coming into 2023. Last year, he was okay in 68 games for low-A Tampa, but obviously a massive breakout, 324, 434, 615. Just looking at everything that Ben Rice brings to the table, I was absolutely enamored with him after I saw him, and I had him on my list, but then he was just going bonkers. He had a couple home runs, was just cranking the ball all over the field, and I'm like, man, this guy's absolutely killing us. And then I went and looked at his stats. I was, damn, he's been dominating Double A. This is probably halfway through his Double A tenure, I think, or something like that. But yeah, and I ended up moving him a lot higher than I thought I was going to. And I think he's above average hit, above average power, solid approach, could run a little bit. He's not burned by any means to below average speed guy, but he's really shown the willingness to run a little bit. So maybe gives you a handful of steals as well. And he played some first base as well this year. Let's see, he actually played, I think, Alessi a little more at first base. No, she's pretty first base, 18 games, catcher 37. So about two-thirds to one-third split there. So similar to Salo and then that split. But yeah, I was definitely enamored with Ben Rice. I think he's very underrated. Like, I just got him in the 13th round or whatever it was of P1 ADP mock. So I think he's still very underrated and a great dynasty target. Let's go over to their Yankees rival with the Boston Red Sox, my favorite team. We both cover at various levels throughout the season, a ton, who in single A, me in double A. And you have Kyle Teal at number 3 overall in your rankings here, Chris. What were some reasons why you bumped Kyle Teal that high?
He's a high floor to hit. Obviously, he's a safe lock to stick behind the dish. And ultimately, I think he's going to be on the fast track to Boston. So you look at the kind of list of catchers here, and honestly, Teal might be the first one to consistently contribute. I know Austin Wells has come up, so obviously we can't say that. But I think looking at the rest of these guys, I think Teal's the first one that gives consistent contribution at the major league level. And he just does so many things well. He's got a high OBP floor. He's a disciplined hitter. He makes really good contact. And I do believe that the power is going to come. His EVs are close to average, but I do think the left-handed bat will play well in Fenway, at least from a double standpoint for him.
Yep.
Where I'm pretty confident in Teal, and just because I've seen him so much, and even though he's only in Greenville a couple of weeks, I still saw him a good bit, and I feel just confident that I know who he is, and I'm more confident in his ability than some of these other guys, which kind of led me to bump him to 3 among catchers.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Just as a Red Sox fan, I am incredibly excited about Kyle Teal. And yeah, I do think I 100% agree he's going to be fast-tracked. He already has been a little bit, and I think he's going to be a fan favorite in Boston. Red Sox fans tend to get behind their catchers. It's like, you know, Jason Varitek for the longest time, Christian Vasquez, who wasn't even as good as Varitek, though he was solid in his own right. But if you're a good all-around catcher in Boston, fans are going to love you. So I think Kyle Teal is going to be the next in line, the guy that we can just plug back there for the next decade or so, hopefully longer, and just not have to worry about that position. Because since we traded Vasquez 2 years ago, whatever it was, Connor Wong had a decent year, don't get me wrong. But yeah, Kyle Teal definitely looks like the catcher of the future here, without question, and I'm very excited for him. The other name you had pretty high, and this guy is coming off a phenomenal season that in the low minors in the Kansas City Royals organization. That's Ramon Ramirez. As I pull up the stats here, 18 years old, turned 18 in mid-June for the Royals DSL affiliate. 41 games, 150 plate appearances. Very impressive. 344, 440, 615 slash line. 9 doubles, 8 home runs. Even had 6 steals and walked more than he struck out. 21 walks to 18 strikeouts. You put him at 7, and I have him at, I think, just aside of my, yeah, I have him at 11 right there, but in that kind of in that same tier range as you. What have you seen from Ronald Ramirez in that sample size that made you comfortable popping him up as highly on a list like this as you did?
Honestly, I'm just hoping that it's not bad TrackMan data from the DSL, because I know that some teams are prone to do that and right, just pump their own guys up for trades, etc. But you look under the hood, and while it was a small sample, talking about his zone contact rate of 90%, walking more than he struck out, not chasing at a high clip at all, and a ninth percentile EV of 103, which is already at MLB average. And so, again, I'm hesitant with a smaller sample, but the data is really good. He's very athletic. He's got a body that you want to dream on just developing. He's a solid receiver behind the plate. He's got a strong arm. He was by far the best catcher in the DSL. I don't think there's any question about that. And so, considering that he was 17 years old when the season started, he was just stood out in an impressive way. And so I think that this is potentially someone that can skip the complex. We saw them do that with Austin Charles last year. So I think he may land in Columbia pretty early, and hopefully we'll get a look at him, at least a full season of looks, because I do believe that Ramon Ramirez can pop off just from the standpoint of he checks a lot of boxes that you want to see. And obviously it's hard to rank DSL guys, but with everything that I've seen and under the hood stuff, it's just, it's hard to ignore what Ramirez has done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he was, despite being one of the best hitters overall in the DSL this past season, he didn't really get as much fanfare as like the Rainer Ariuses, Wilbur Francisca, and those guys are obviously very talented, but they got a lot of the pub, and then others later in the DSL season, but you didn't really hear Ramirez's name as much as you probably should have. But yeah, it's a very exciting profile. Obviously, we'll see. You know, we've seen these DSL guys pop off and then pop right back down. So hopefully he can continue that, whether it's in complex or low A next year, because yeah, very exciting 41 games from him in the DSL. So definitely one of the more intriguing catching prospects heading into 2024. All right, let's keep it going here. So again, our top 10s for Chris, Basalo, Salas, Teal, Ford, Jefferson Cairo, Rushing, Ramon Ramirez, Ballesteros, Wells, and Rice. For me, Basalo, Ford, Salas, Rice, Wells, Rushing, Ballesteros, Jefferson Cairo, Teal, and Hunter Goodman. Let's keep it going with the remainder of our top 25. For me, that's Ramon Ramirez at 11, Kevin Parada at 12, Diego Cartea at 13, Edgar Cairo at 14, Theron Lorenzo at 15, Rafi Velasquez, 16, 17 through 20, Alfredo Duno, Cole Craig, who has a very interesting set of positions right now on my sheet, catcher, short, and outfield. See how long that keeps up. He's 18. Creed Williams and Blake Mitchell run up my top 20. And then 21 through 25, Augustin Ramirez, Daniel Suzak, Dominic Keegan, Julio Zayas, and Nathan Hickey. Chris, who's your 11 through 25?
So it starts with Edgar Cairo, followed by Diego Cartaya and Hunter Goodman, with a caveat that he's not going to catch anymore. And then it's Alfredo Duno, who I think is the biggest breakout potential of this group. 15th will be Ralphie Velasquez, new draftee with the Guardians. 16 through 20 is Augustin Ramirez, Kevin Parada, Drake Baldwin, Thyron Lorenzo, and Cole Carrig. And then 21 through 25 is Ivan Herrera, Julio Zayas, Blake Mitchell, Josue Brasino, and Creed Willems.
Am I the only one that whenever I say Ralphie Velasquez's name, thinks of Ralphie from The Simpsons?
I haven't, but I will now.
I know, it's weird. And same thing, I don't know why, but very different show. But whenever I hear Creed Williams, I think of Creed from The Office.
Yes, dude. The best. Creed's one of the most underrated character on the show. Creed is phenomenal.
I know. It's funny. At first, when you watch The Office, you're like, Creed's kind of weird, right? Like, he's not like a big character, but he's always there. And then as you watch The Office more and more, there's a higher appreciation for what Creed brings to the table of that show. And I saw some podcast or show or YouTube short, whatever the heck it was, that was just like ranking top 10 Office characters. I think they had him like fifth. They had him fifth behind, or it was maybe sixth. They obviously had the big four of Michael Scott, Dwight, Jim, and Pam. And then he was like in the same tier. Maybe they had Michael Malone five or something like that. He was like right in that 5, 6, 7 range, which was higher than I thought. But I was like, yeah, Creed is really funny and really weird. But anyway, back from The Office to catching prospects here. But hey, you never hurts to mix in a little Office chat in a podcast for sure. But yeah, let's start with who you just mentioned in your rankings here, Alfredo Duno. As I also agree, there's a few names that I look at here because, you know, people's questions like, all right, who's going to be the next guy or two guys or three guys that are going to jump in that top 10? And for me, let's go three guys. If I had to name three, Ramon Ramirez is cheating because he probably should be 10. Take Goodman out, put him 10. So I'm not going to include him. I look at Rafi Velasquez. I look at Alfredo Duno. And I look at third one, I could go, you know, either they run Lorenzo or maybe a Cole Kerrig. I don't know, but I just don't know if he stays at catcher long term. But you know, who are your three, Chris? And then we'll get into Alfredo Duno here in a second.
Yeah, it would be Duno, would be Augustin Ramirez, and then probably I actually think I'm investing in Diego Cartaya. I think there's some rebound potential there.
Yeah.
I know the contact skills have been not so great, but there are things to like about Cartaya, and he's still young. So I think there's the potential for him to bounce back in a big way. So he's probably the other that I'd invest in this range.
Yeah, he's still only 22. He's turned 22 back in early September. So feels like he's been around for a while because he really has. He's pre-COVID signing for the Dodgers there out of Venezuela. And one that was really the talk of that system in terms of catching prospects until rushing took over that mantle. But yeah, you know, obviously the power is still there. 19 home runs last year in just 93 games, but only hit 189. But yeah, I definitely agree that there's some bounce back potential here with Diego Cartaya. Moving over to Alfredo Duno from the Cincinnati Reds, another, you know, standout in the DSL that didn't really get talked about enough. Maybe it's just a catcher thing. I don't know. I can definitely see that. But in 45 games, 195 plate appearances, /303, 451, 493, 9 doubles, 6 home runs, 6 steals, and nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 38-41. How high do you see him rising in rankings, Chris? Because especially with, or even in overall or just within his position, you figure by this time next year, when we're doing this for our 2025 ranking, which feels weird to say, we'll probably have, actually, I don't think this would be like a ton of graduations this year. You probably get a few, but I can see the vast majority of that top 10, at least 7 or 8 of them. I mean, Wells will graduate probably, maybe Rice, maybe, but outside of that, there's still guys that a Goodman will. But how high do you think Duno can rise, even with all these guys, or most of them staying on the list throughout next year? Do you think this could be like a top 5 catching prospect in a year from now?
I 100% believe that. I'm not one to use comps at all, but when I watch Duno, I see a lot of Francisco Alvarez, and I really believe in that power. And I really believe that he's got a good feel to hit too. So I'm fully buying in on a Duno breakout in 2024. Probably starts the year at the complex, probably spends the entire year at the complex, honestly, just due to age. But I really do think that could be a special bat. Whether he sticks behind the plate or not is the question. He DH'd a ton. So he may not even be on the list because he's not catching. So that is a fear that I do have. But from a just bat standpoint, I'm absolutely way in on Alfredo Duno. And I think that this ranking might be conservative.
Yeah. Alfredo can do no wrong. That's for sure. I was sitting on that one for about 5 minutes now. I thought of it a little while ago. I'm like, oh, I got to remember. I remember that when we get to Alfredo in here. But yeah, absolutely. And it's funny too. Alvarez obviously has the huge power. And then outside of that, like the contact skills have come and gone. I haven't been real consistent with him. Obviously, walks a good amount, which has helped get the OBP up. But if Duno can get even close to the power bat that Alvarez is while showing better contact abilities than Alvarez has, that's a scary thought. And when you factor in Great American Ballpark in that, obviously still many years away, we're probably talking best case scenario sometime in late 2026 or something like that. But there's a lot to dream on here with Alfredo Duno. So yeah, he's definitely, you know, when you look at guys that could jump up a lot in these rankings, he is absolutely one of them. And really the first thing I look to outside of my rankings. And even now, like you said, this might be too conservative. I'm thinking that too, Chris. I'm thinking, like, why don't I have him higher than this? So after we stop recording, I'm going to really look more into my ranking of him, maybe move him up even more and maybe even into the top 10, because it's a lot to like here with Alfredo Duno. Another name I wanted to bring up here, Chris, was Edgar Caro. Obviously went from the Angels to the White Sox, from one suspect org to another, but still only 22, and he was one of the bigger rising names in terms of catching prospects at this time last year. He's coming off a year with low A Inland Empire, which, where is Inland Empire? I love these team names are just like, oh, it's in San Bernardino, California. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking it was in California, but didn't know where.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was in California, but I'm just like, Inland Empire. I'm like, I don't know where you get that. There's probably some story behind that, but with that team, 111 games, 513 plate appearances, slashed a robust .312, .435, .530, 35 doubles, 17 home runs, 12 steals, great approach, 73 walks and 91 Ks. And then this past year, still showed the great approach, 72 walks, 76 strikeouts in 101 games in the AA Southern League. Most of that still with the Angels org, but got 31 games with AA Birmingham later in the season. The average dipped, .255. The power really dipped, only 6 home runs, .351 slug. But you still have him 11th. I still have him. Where did I have him? I think 14th. I got to look at the, 14th overall. It's pretty close there. Still top 15 overall for both of us. Are you willing to buy low on Edgar Caro right now? Do you think maybe a change of scenery will do him good now?
I think the change of scenery went from bad development org to bad development org is not ideal by any means. But I will say that I do believe that Caro's the kind of talent that you just stay out of the way of, where I still believe in the contact skills. They were certainly down from what we saw in 2022, but I still think that this is the kind of bat that bounces back. Like, we saw the power decrease, but even still, with the down year, he nearly walked more than he struck out. He had an 84% overall contact rate, which still, that's plus or better, like firmly plus. So I do believe that there's a solid buy opportunity here where you can get him at a reasonable price. And I do think that you probably get a solid return on the investment too, while there's this opportunity. It may not last because he could come back and be really good in 2024 and kill that chance. So I think this is the offseason to buy Edgar Caro.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess I thought his contact rate dipped further than it did, because, yeah, it was still very good overall. I was wondering, where's the power end up long term? Were those 12 steals, were those a mirage? He had one steal this past year. Is he going to run a little bit? Which obviously isn't a huge red flag, obviously, for a catcher, but fun when he was running a little bit. So maybe that comes back, maybe it doesn't. We'll see. But yeah, absolutely buy low. I feel like the value on him has sunk too far down rankings. And yeah, I think it's definitely might be the lowest his value ever is. We'll see. But yeah, it was, when he got traded out, I was like, it could be any other org, literally, but not have to go to the White Sox. But we'll see how that works out. But yeah, I guess the last name on here that I wanted to get your opinion of, because this is a guy that's really hard for me to rank. There's a lot of these guys throughout the minor leagues, or at least my rankings, that I have a hard time ranking for one reason or another. And this guy, Cole Kerrig, it's an interesting skill set. Obviously, very athletic. He played catcher, short, and outfield. who knows where the heck he's going to end up long term. It's the Rockies, which adds another wrinkle into it on top of all the positions that he did play this year. So how are you valuing Cole Kjerrig right now? And I think there's a pretty wide range of valuations on him. I'm pretty sure Welsh is really high on Cole Kjerrig, and I've seen others that are lower on him. I think I'm in the middle, and it looks like you are as well. What are you making of this kind of intriguing profile we see here?
It's a tough one for me, ultimately, because I think that he chases a lot. We saw some interest. It's a weird profile, I will say that. It's really high chase, but really high contact, at least on pitches in the zone. I think there's some decent power in the profile, too. And so I'm such a mixed bag on what in the world do I do with this guy. So I understand completely like where you're coming from. Probably one of the toughest ones for me, too, because everybody seems to be pushing him really high. And I'm sitting back like, I don't know. I just don't quite see it. Now, the performance, it warrants him being pushed. Like, he was great in his debut. And he was coming off a great season at San Diego State as well. But you look at the overall profile, and it's just a weird one to me to try to figure out and to try to evaluate. So, yeah, I'm at a complete loss on what to do with Cole Kjerrig. I think that he could be top 10. I think he could move off catcher completely. There's a chance that a lot of things could happen over this next year, and we could end up being like way too low, might end up being way too high. At this point, it's really hard to say, but I'm not sure I believe in the power, and I'm not sure where the contact ends up falling, at least the plate discipline because of the chase issues. Yeah, I'm staying a bit more conservative. Like I said, you look at the profile, it's so weird. Like, he walked 9 times in his senior year or junior year at San Diego State. That was a 5% walk rate. He walked a little more this year as a professional, 13 times in 150. That's an 8% walk rate. But throughout his career, like his minor league career, his college career, did not walk at all. So I don't know. Like, I'm honestly struggling like internally with what to do with Kjerrig. I could argue for him like as high as Hunter Goodman is, like at 13 for me. And I think that the more conservative spot's probably like around Kevin Parada, which is closer to where I have him. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to ask you about Kevin Parada before we got out of here. Someone that you chuckle over there. Someone that we saw out in the Arizona Fall League who didn't look really good. Not to overreact too much to that, but he wasn't terrible, obviously, during the minor league season here in 2023. But at the same time, I think it's fair to say that he has performed expectations so far. And obviously, you've dropped him a bit further than I have. See, again, you had him, where'd you have him? 17. I had him 12. So how are you valuing him moving forward after the kind of the season that we saw from him, which was a 248, 324, 428 slash line, 14 home runs in 105 games. So again, not terrible, but kind of a step back and I think a step down from what people were expecting.
Yeah, I do think that he's a shell of who he was in college. Like, you look at the college profile and you're like, where did this Kevin Parada go that posted high OBPs, that made a lot of contact, that hit for power? It's just all flown out the window at this point. And he was majorly disappointing in the Arizona Fall League. I'd say he was pretty disappointing overall this year, too. I was disappointed with him behind the plate. I was disappointed with him with the bat, like just all around. I don't know what to ultimately do with him, but I'm more out than I am in, I'll say. And I had to drop him. Like, I had just written up the Mets system before we went out to Arizona. I think I had him 8th in the system. And then everybody's ragging me. They were, oh, there's the Mets 8th best prospect. And so I did drop him down to 11 in the system, but ultimately, like, he's a big faller for me, and he needs a big 2024 in a really big way. Like, he needs to rebound hard because he's on the verge of falling off.
Oh, absolutely. And like you mentioned, some of the skills that we saw in Georgia Tech, and maybe it's just we should stop trusting Georgia Tech catchers because they always let you down in the end. Yeah, at least Matt Wieters did something in the major league level. Joey Bart fizzled out really quick. Maybe we just got to stop trusting Georgia Tech catchers, but he's not the same guy that he was at Georgia Tech. You look at his last year, almost as many walks as strikeouts there in 2022. And then this year, he only walked 36 times in 105 games, 126 Ks. And then in the fall league, again, only 18 games, but four walks to 29 strikeouts in 75 plate appearances. Only hit 186 with a 240 OBP. Did have three home runs. I guess that's a little something, but I think there's still decent power there. But where's the average end up? You know, does he provide an impactful average OBP, or at least ones that don't hurt you in those categories? So, yeah, I think there's a lot more questions than answers right now with Kevin Paradis. So hopefully, I'll get to see him more of him this upcoming year. I got to assume he played 14 games with Double A Birmingham to end the year. Binghamton, my bad, to end the year. So you got to figure he starts there again next year, and we play them a lot. So I'll probably get a lot of live looks. So we'll see if he has turned things around next year. But I think that's going to wrap us up, though. Again, quick before we leave the show here, recap our top 20 for Chris, Samuel Basalo, Ethan Salas, Kyle Teal, Harry Ford, Jefferson Cairo, Dalton Rushing, Ramon Ramirez, Moises Ballesteros, Austin Wells, Ben Rice at 10. Edgar Cairo, Diego Cartaya, Hunter Goodman, Alfredo Duno, Ralphie Velasquez, Augustin Ramirez, Kevin Parada, Drake Baldwin, Theron Lorenzo, Cole Kerrig at 20, Ivan Herrera, Julio Zayas, Blake Mitchell, Josue Briseno, I believe it is, Creed Williams at 25. For me, Sammy Basalo, Harry Fort, Ethan Salas, Ben Rice, Austin Wells, Dalton Rushing, Moises Ballesteros, Jefferson Cairo, Kyle Teal, Hunter Goodman at 10, Ramon Ramirez, Kevin Parada, Diego Cartaya, Edgar Cairo, Theron Lorenzo, Ralphie Velasquez, Alfredo Duno, Cole Kerrig, Creed Williams, Blake Mitchell at 20, Augustin Ramirez, Daniel Suzak, Dominic Keegan, Julio Zayas, and Nathan Hickey. That rounds out our catching prospect rankings. We'll be back later in the week with a guest for our Dynasty prospect, or it should be Dynasty catcher rankings. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.